You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
Yeah, welcome back to the programme again. Thanks to Andy Friend for joining us, and Godspeed him. We wish him the best of luck in his travels around Europe, starting on Thursday. But anyway, great to see him. And thanks to William as well for dropping in. It's panel time, second hour of the programme. Our panel this evening is none other than Keane O'Connell. How are you, Keane?
Good, Jerry.
Good to have you back.
Isn't it appropriate, Jerry, that he's armed with his bottle?
Ah, yeah.
Bottlers. Is all I'll say. Bottlers.
It's a GAA one.
It doesn't matter, Jerry. It's appropriate that he has a bottle.
It's 9:05 and it's already started.
A GAA Go bottle, unfortunately. Dave Collins is the other guest. How are you, Dave?
Hi, Jerry. How's things?
Yeah, grand. Interesting weekend. Interesting hurling weekend. Some survivors, some people fall by the wayside. That's what happens in championship, I suppose. But Galway. Now, the funny thing is, they've topped the group.
Yeah.
Finished with 8 points, and Kilkenny have finished with 6.
But phenomenal weekend.
First half of the performance. And we can't put a tooth on it. It was dire.
It was dire. It was dire from a spectator's point of view, but also from a player's point of view, because no matter what they tried, nothing worked. And they were out of position, they were caught in no man's land more times than one, and they were trying stuff, but it was failing. And at this stage in the championship, that shouldn't be happening. You can't really be risking that kind of backpassing if you're not confident in it. We got caught for the 2 goals completely out of the blue. I think Aina actually had the ball up in the far corner before I was on his hurl, you know, and these things happen. Look, it's better than happening in a semi-final of Leinster than happening in a final. I was even looking at the table there today, like, as you said, we're top of the table with 8 points, and like, we've only drawn 2, lost none. Kilkenny have lost 1, so we're there. Lucky enough to be there after yesterday, 12 points down. Like, there was one stage where we were 10, 11 points and kind of not even looking like we were going to get back on the scoreboard for a long period of time. And the next thing then, from 44 minutes to 52, Galway just lit up.
But did Dublin...
Yeah,
did they tire?
They did collapse
did
a small bit.
Too much effort into the first half.
You know, when you've got... No, I think it's more kind of complacency set in than anything else, and it went against them. But I have to give Dublin credit. Like, every time you saw a Dublin or a Galway lad with a ball, it was a Dublin man too. There was 2 there. There was 1 looking for the offload. There was 1 looking for the breakdown. And they worked hard for it. So credit where credit is due. They did deserve that lead.
Is Micheál Donoghue gradually finding his Dublin squad?
And if you look at Micheál Donoghue's record, Micheál Donoghue came in 16 to us, and we got beaten in the quarter final against Tipperary by a point. He has 1 year under his belt in Dublin, and it's going to take that time to blend the boys back in. You can see the Dublin lads are actually coming to the fore again. Like, Boland was class, I thought. Sutcliffe was back on form. 10 years on, he's flying it. Like, but his position was super. Now, I do think Galway had a major loss, obviously, when Concannon came on. Like, you see, now, I was giving credit to Concannon previously for running straight at the goals, and that's what he did the last. He came on, got the ball, and drew the penalty, you know, because he attacked. And if Galway do that from the off, I think we will be a hard bet. But doing the stupid stuff and the silly passing just don't work, you know. And they've learned a lot from it. But it's been a mad road to the final. Like, from a Kilkenny point of view, they have 163 points scored in total. Galway have 165 points scored in total. Like, there's not much in them. Now, when you look at the points against, Galway are better off as well, but Kilkenny have better scoring forwards at the moment. We're not scoring enough, I don't think, from play.
An interesting one to see Wexford come and beat Kilkenny yesterday, Keane. I don't think anybody expected that side of the results to go that way. Everybody was looking to see could Westmeath top of Antrim. But for Wexford to come and beat Kilkenny, it was an amazing game, really, and an amazing result.
Yeah, no, it was really dramatic. And as you said, not many people would have anticipated that happening. But all the same, Wexford were fighting for their lives. They didn't want to go into the Joe McDonagh Cup. So they obviously were pumped up for the game the week before. they went 17 points ahead against Westmeath, and they let that one slip. But it was clear, even seeing the interview with Lee Chin in the Sunday game last night, that they wanted to do something for Darry Egan, that he was a manager, he was under pressure, and there was clearly a bond there between him and the players. Obviously, the result against Westmeath was a really, really big blow. But in fairness to Wexford, they came back, they leaked two goals early on, and it's been a really disappointing Leinster Championship for them. If you look at the first game against Galway in the Pearse Stadium, they scored two goals early in that game, and after that Galway won pulling up, and Galway weren't even brilliant on the day, but they won convincingly. Since then, Wexford really fitful. Now, they had chances, lots of chances against Dublin in that game. They lost though at Croke Park, but to survive in the Leinster Championship was critical for them. And in fairness,
well,
we might
now see that the fact that they lost to Dublin might not be, you know, as bad a result given the way Dublin has come.
There was never going to be
bad,
much,
you know,
between them. And Dublin opted to play their games in Croke Park, and just in that game, Wexford had a lot of chances. They missed a lot of chances. But there's nothing between Wexford or Dublin. Look at the results of the last 4 or 5 years, and those teams can cause Galway and Kilkenny plenty of bother, as they've illustrated too.
It's fine for you to say, you know, the Wexford, we were disappointed to go to the Joe McDonough, but you see, they have to buy into the fact, I think, lads, that the Championship is more intense now. That's the There's no long breaks, David.
No, there's no long breaks, but they're capable of playing at the top level. They really are. You know, when given their past and given what they have produced and the young lads coming through, they have the potential. They have it. But it's just Darry Egan. I don't know what happened in that setup. They didn't get the best out of them. I think they were used to the whole drive from Fitzgerald mentality all the time, and you can't keep that going all the time. So there was a lull, but I do think they can retain where they are.
Keane just made something there, it just as a glancing point, the Dublin decision to play their games in Croke Park.
Oh, yeah.
That's Micheál Donoghue, correct?
I would imagine so, but I would actually prefer to play Dublin in Croke Park if I was playing against them, because you can open them up. In Parnell Park, it's such tighter atmosphere and it's in the top of you, so to me, I think they should have been stayed playing them in Parnell. It's like coming into Pearse Stadium, you know, you always have that battleground, or you have that kind of advantage of home territory. Dublin, Croke Park's a different story. Really is.
Players, though, David, just haven't played in Parnell Park, though, the makeup of the current Dublin team. But they're maybe not as physically robust as they were in your playing day. Is that a fair?
Yeah,
assessment?
Yeah, it's a fair assessment, Jackie. 100%. When I didn't look at it like that. When you think about it, they liked it tighter. They liked to keep it kind of nice and physical. You know, you had Conal Keeney. There was one lad who loved that heavy battle. So yeah, it's a good point. They are playing a bit more of a free flowing brand of hurling. But you looked at the kind of their support players too. They were running in waves, and Micheál is bringing that in. So they're bringing the ball into the tackle, bringing it through the lines and playing the lines all the time. It was funny when I look back actually in the Leinster final 2012 was on TG Cahir the other night, and if we had played any bit as smart as what they're doing now, we would have won that first Leinster the All Ireland final in 2012, because there was balls coming out of the back line that we were just bombing up the field. And when you look back, hindsight's a great thing. So yeah, they've changed the play, and the game has changed in that sense. Lads are using the ball better, they're breaking the lines, and they're not playing passes that aren't 70% guaranteed to hit the target. You know,
were Cork unlucky against Limerick?
I don't think so. I think Limerick were class. At home, the crowd, the energy, the atmosphere was definitely going to help them. It was worth 2 or 3 points to them, I think. Limerick were just, I suppose, the last night. I listened to Joe Canning and Don Logue last night on the thing, and they were talking that Limerick had never went away. They didn't really, but the teams had gotten to the kind of level where they're at that stage of the Championship. Limerick, from now on, in the last 4 years, have been on a streets above everybody else.
They peaked. Are they doing this? What they do? They get to a certain trap, and then they start to move on.
I think so. Hegarty came into it yesterday. He was just phenomenal. But he's, as I said, he's learned to deal with the referee. You know, and he's learned to deal with the abuse that he's getting from players and physicality. So, right, if he just plays hurling and they don't get sent off and they don't do stupid things. No, they got to look at the green a few times with a few passes and a few frees that went their way.
And a penalty.
And a penalty that went their way. So look at, Yeah,
their physical approach, they're still getting
it's
away.
It's hard to fathom though. Cork out, Waterford out, Championship ball
Carlo
already, and kind of going seriously.
Offaly still in it. Yeah, do you know, that's a terrible anomaly, Dave.
It's a bit...
Well, it might bring us back to Donalogue's point about second-tier football competitions, you know.
Mm.
The thing is...
Say that to Westmeath, didn't they win it last year?
Yes. But the other thing is, it's only a team in the Leinster Championship that gets relegated to the Joe McDonagh.
Mm.
And... like Kerry aren't allowed into the.
There's change at Congress, though, Jerry, this year. That's like, so going forward, there will be.
Kerry will be in the Munster, is my understanding of it, yeah. But there'll be six teams on either side of it, so now they're going to be a relegation in Munster.
But let's be fair about it, let's. With no disrespect to Kerry, they're going to be down the bottom.
Yeah, but like, you look at Westmeath and you look at Antrim, like, you're minus 80 points at Antrim. Scoring difference, like, there's, and you look at the Munster table, minus 17 is the worst for Waterford, had a disaster of a year.
Terrible.
So Kerry are going into that, they are going to come last.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they have to have, and go back to Don Lowe's point, is they need to be playing
at a higher level
to get progress.
Will demoralising defeat negate that progress?
It has a foreign again. It has the pros and cons of it. Yeah, 100%. Like, you don't want to go getting bit all the time. Like the numbers racked up against Westmeath and Antrim, 320, 423. Like, there's huge.
Especially
numbers.
When the way that the championship is designed, that they come at a, we'll say the likes of Galway play them, and Galway know they have to put up a big score to guarantee themselves.
Yeah,
that was changed this year, though. That was changed this year as well, though, George. That the them results weren't going to come into play.
Yeah.
So that had changed in the system, like, so.
But still,
it's demoralising for the county to suffer it. But the only thing is, like, 1 year, obviously 2019, Galway got caught when they didn't beat Carlow by as much as the other counties had. But that wasn't going to be a factor this year. So that was
yeah, it's relevant, really, knockout point. But it's still, like, you're kind of looking at the teams going getting hammered by 20 points. Doesn't do anything for confidence, no, definitely not. But I still think the second tier teams or the second tier competitions are so important for this breakthrough teams to come through. Whether they're up for a year or 2 years, it's still development and it's still their competition to win. You look at that Talton Cup, there's 12 or 16 teams in it. Like, those teams want to be playing at some sort of level of championship. There's no point in them going playing Kerry and Armagh or Tyrone. They will get hammered, you know.
Speaking, if we may just diversify slightly for a second, you're retired now, remember. You're talking about playing and not playing in a nondescript competition. The County Hurling Championship here, your own club Mellows, we're our own club Mellows, and one of them, the eight clubs in limbo with this scene. With what is it? Is it going to be immersed? Is this a slow process to the bringing the intermediate up in numbers, or what's it?
Nobody knows what's going on. One Beano, so you can't win anything this year.
You can win this competition.
You can win the competition and get up into promotion into the top 16 of the competition. So yeah, you're in limbo land, really.
But there's still nothing out there what you're playing for, what format it's going to go.
No, there's nothing there.
Would it be an idea to put up a cup?
You see, this is it, and it's a possibility. But then you see. Then you see you have the introduction of a new cup when you're losing the senior A status and you're losing senior B status, really, and teams, and that's a mentality switch, really, more than anything else. Like, if you can get your head around it going, right, really, that competition is the senior B, next is intermediate down. But there really is only top 16. There is only 12 of those teams that are capable of playing at that top level. So, I don't like it. I like the more games, 100%. But I'd like more clarity, and I'd like if there was something to play for and something to win at the end of the season. Sure, what's the point? It's all about winning a competition.
It's just that, you know, the club scene is not getting a look. You know, I know that's not the season for it. But when we think about things like that, you're talking about nondescript competitions.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been interesting. We got a bit of clarity.
Yeah, it would be great to get a bit of clarity on it, but I don't think we're going to get it.
I'd say it'll probably come through after this year, and how this year goes. I would imagine there'll be some thought, extra thought put into it, but if that means putting
why waste a year of
eight teams
clubs
in the intermediate up there and making it an intermediate championship?
Well, that's what you see, this is it. So you're a senior, intermediate, junior, like those are your three competitions. So it's either you live by the sword and die by the sword call it the Intermediate Championship and bring 16-16.
Yeah, I mean, some of the teams in the Intermediate and Junior Championship at the moment are struggling with numbers.
Yep.
I mean, let's be totally honest. There are some teams in the Intermediate Championship.
But the problem with the Intermediate, Jerry, is this, and no fault of certain clubs, they're second teams of senior clubs.
Yep. Yep.
And that, once a senior man gets injured, that weakens the Intermediate team. And unfortunately,
but even when you're pulling, yeah, when you're pulling from your, like Meadows have the issue when your junior team and your senior team, and when you're pulling from the juniors to play a senior, you're going to lose key players in that junior team. And certain players don't want to play senior for that reason, because they might get one game.
Yes.
So there is that kind of pull and pull, or pull kind of back against the senior.
Yeah.
Intermediate clubs are exactly the same way. Cashel or Sarsfields, all the bigger teams have got two serious teams in it.
Yeah.
So
I remember years ago in football, where if you played for if you were an intermediate and you played three games with the seniors, you lost your intermediate status.
Mm.
And like three games isn't bad, you know, but you wouldn't like to think it would happen after losing one or two.
Yeah, you see, this is it. Like when you're playing one game and you might even get 20 minutes. That just doesn't do any player any favours, and you can see why a player wouldn't want to play when you lose that whole season gone in. And yeah, it's something that needs to be looked at, especially from retaining players with the competition that's out there to keep players playing GAA. It's something has to change, and it has to benefit the club and the player, really. But going back to the second tier competitions, they are crucial to keep going. But there has to be a carrot at the end of the road to drive players on and to actually keep them focused and go, right, there's something here for us. Okay, Mellows, from the point of view of, right, I know the lads are training hard, league campaign hasn't went well, etc., but they're still driving it on to go for next year. Because if they're not in the Senior A next year, then the club is kind of, it's been on a downward spiral since Mulqueen had left. And it's now having to try to get back up and recover from last year, you know.
All right, listen, we're going to take our first commercial break. We'll do that now. Do come back after these. It's only a short one.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
We're going to move on because next weekend, of course, Galway footballers are taking on Westmeath. And again, the conclusion of most people is that Galway will win this game easily enough. Is there any hint of a banana skin in it, Cian?
Well, there's definitely a hint of a banana skin. That was shown at the Athletic Grounds on Saturday, where Westmeath were unfortunate to lose against Armagh, a highly regarded Armagh team. It's a dangerous game for Galway. Obviously, if Galway play to maximum potential, you'd feel that they have the ability and the skill to win, but they'll have to deliver a good performance, because Westmeath, they have a home game in the All-Ireland series. They won the Tailteann Cup last year. That generated a feel-good factor in that county. Now, they didn't go well in the league, but they were playing in the league knowing that they were in the All-Ireland Championship, whereas a lot of other teams were playing for further status. So it's a dangerous game. Galway, obviously, if Galway played to maximum potential, they should have enough to win the game, but it definitely is a banana skin, and I think Pádraig Joyce and his management team will afford Westmeath the utmost respect, because they have good players.
And Desi Dolan is a fair old hawk.
Desi Dolan has evolved. Last year, Jack Cooney won the, he was the manager when they won the Tailteann Cup, but Desi Dolan, a hugely experienced figure, won a Sigerson with NUIG back in 2003, even though he was injured for the weekend, but he was a very talented player, obviously, and an experienced campaigner with Westmeath. But they have good players, the likes of fullback Kevin Maguire, John Heslin, prolific scorer Luke Lachlan, a good player with the Downs. They're a good team, and they're dangerous in Mullingar. So Galway will need to, a win puts Galway into a commanding position. Tyrone are playing Armagh the other game, so if Galway have 4 points going into the last game at a neutral venue against Armagh, that'd be a good place to be, because you want to get straight through to the quarter final. You want to avoid that preliminary quarter final, because there's going to be good teams in it.
And then you see the draws in other games, like Monaghan and Derry drawn, Dublin Roscommon drawn. That it's no good. At least they didn't lose, but it isn't of any benefit really to the teams. They're actually putting more pressure on themselves now, because now it's really becoming dog eat dog in those groups. Just a draw throws a spanner in the works.
Completely, and when you look at when they're going to play in the preliminary quarterfinals, the teams that finish second have a home advantage. You're already looking at high possibility that Kerry are going to be one of the second place teams. So if you're coming third, you don't want to be going down to Killarney. There's going to be other good teams that are in second place. So Galway will really want to considering they got the win against Tyrone, they'll want to top the group, and to do that you have to win in Mullingar.
What's going on up north, and they're almost cancelling each other out, like with Monaghan against Derry now, for example, and stuff like that. I always thought that Monaghan would give them plenty, while I fancy Derry to win, you know, win out of I fancied them to win out of Ulster, and I think there will be a serious team. I think I said it to you earlier on, I had a mate from Meath in my car today while I was up in Dublin, and he's done the dumps, and he basically said to me, he says, Leinster football is in trouble. And I says, why is that? He says, Dublin are the best team in Leinster, they can't beat Roscommon. Kildare are the second best team in Leinster, they can't beat Sligo. Now that might be just considering Connacht to be a poor relation in a way, but you know, a couple of years ago that wouldn't have happened in either case.
It might not happen, Gerry, but you can look at it a number of ways.
Now, Roscommon are a hugely improved side, and obviously so are Sligo.
Yeah. Roscommon have improved, sorry Kane.
No, completely. Roscommon were third in Division 1. They've won a couple of Connacht championships in the last 6 or 7 years. Yeah. They're a good outfit. They've had good underage success, maybe going back 5 or 6 years, particularly where they played in 2 All-Ireland Under 21 finals, and the Smiths, the Murtas, all of those players played in those teams. Yeah. They're a proper outfit that maybe didn't deliver as much nationally as they're beginning to do now.
Yeah, and they've been well backed over the years, like the likes of Sean Mulrine is a big backer of them financially, like putting in work for groundwork, something akin to what Shane Lowry has done.
I think the question is the Dubs. And the Dubs becoming an ordinary team,
please God. I think they are. I think the pack are coming back to them. It's more than in the hurling. There's peaks and waves, and you know, like the Dublin were the kingpins for a long, long time, and now the standards have been risen by other counties.
They rose to win all the All Irelands, and then the change of management. Whether the current manager is the man for the job, and I think his position has been weakened by the fact that they brought back Packenroy into the periphery of the management team, and Cluxton's
back in as well.
I don't know would you call it retirement, but he's back from not having answered the phone to the manager, basically, is what we'd say after 2 years, and it just gives you kind of a tint of insecurity there.
It does, and you look at the players and the subs that they have to bring on. Now they don't have the breadth and the depth of talent that they had previously, no more than Kilkenny in the hurling. You know, they're in that
they're
kind
down
of
low to 17. Yeah, from we'll say 23, 24.
Yeah, and they you could be bringing on lads that had won 3, 4 All Ireland titles from the bench, and it would just massive impact on the game. And you kind of go on, when you see them coming on, there's two lads now having to mark those lads that are coming on already. They don't have that.
With
now.
Kevin McMenamin, come on, you knew he was going to score a goal.
Kevin McMenamin, Bernard Brogan, Cormac Costello in All Ireland finals. Michael Darren McCauley, impact players. They were players, as David said, with numerous All-Ireland titles.
You knew when they were coming on, as Dave said, there was going to be two men marking them, and they were going to get a goal, and they were going to get a significant score.
They changed the complexion of the game, all the energy that they bring to it, and the experience, and they can just position right. But they also have that mental toughness that, right, if they're 1 point down with 5 minutes to go, they're still not bet.
Yeah.
You know, and that once that's in your mindset, you're a different animal altogether. They're struggling with that right now. So they are. Kilkenny are on the rebuild as well. Limerick, like we looked at them over the last couple of weeks, and they're hurling the same way. So it'll come again. I do think they're coming back to the pack, but the other teams are actually developing to bring their game forward. Now, football, to any neutral supporter, seems to be just backpassing of a ball half the time, and you're looking at it kind of going, will you attack the ball or at least move forward with it? Dublin do that when they were playing at the top level. They seem to be doing a lot more hand passing back now and kind of controlling it at the back.
Just a quick one back to hurling here. A couple of racing friends that I have from Cork, I was talking to a couple of this evening.
They're depressed, I'd say.
They are, but they're quite positive. They're saying that this has been a good year for Cork hurling, that behind Pat Ryan they've decent squad, and they're looking forward to the future. They think that they've kind of turned the corner, some of these guys.
Yeah, but is Patrick Horgan going to do another year? You know what I mean? Like top scorer, or like lead scorer of the actual championship. No,
he had 1 of 14.
You know, like, and when he's not going to be able to stay going at that level that he's going at. No, he's a phenomenal player, and he's holding them together. So how they're going to replace him? Hernandy is getting older. These lads aren't going to be around forever, so I think they needed to make more progress. I think they needed to be in an All-Ireland semi-final, you know, to actually claim that they're going well.
So where do Galway sit now in both codes? Football, you'd be confident enough that they have the ability there to go on and do something this year.
Yeah, no, in football, Jerry, Galway are as good as any team out there. And they're probably in a situation where I think five or six teams will believe that they can win the All-Ireland. It's probably the most open the football championship has been. And that's a good thing. Getting to the All-Ireland final last year was a great experience for a lot of emerging players. The depth of the panel was something that Pádraic Joyce spoke about at the end of last year and at the start of this year, that he wanted to introduce a few new players and reintegrate guys like Peter Cook who have come back. And I think that is in a good the depth of the panel is increased, in that they use the league well. Due to they had players unavailable, frontline players, if you want to call them that, and other guys, Johnny McGrath, amongst others, have come in and they've delivered. So I think Galway are as good as what's out there, but I think to get to a quarter final unscathed, it'd be good, and from there on in, anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And the hurlers, Dave?
I still think they're third or fourth best in the country at the moment. There's definitely improvement there, but on any given day, if they play like they played for 10 minutes of that game yesterday, they can challenge anybody. It'll be interesting to see how they react for the first 20 minutes in the Leinster final. They need to be coming out all guns blazing and actually just lead from the front.
They've kind of tended to start slow.
And it was interesting comment by Shefflin about they thought the warm up was lively and hitting hard. Maybe it's the flip, you don't do that. I don't know, but like when we were there, it was all about the warm-up. You were focused, you were in the zone. But geez, Dublin hit them at intensity yesterday. And if Kilkenny do the same, how will we respond? So I think they need to work on that for the next 2 weeks.
Kilkenny led them by 6 points down in Orland Park, coming into the middle of the second half. And Galway did very, very well to level that game.
They did.
But they allowed Kilkenny crank up that lead.
Yeah, but that's been a trait of them for this whole season. And we can't let that go on. But I just kind of, you look at, we played Kilkenny in the first round of the Leinster, I think it was the first or second round, meet them in a Leinster final, and you could meet them in an All-Ireland final in 4 or 5 weeks' time. Like, you've played them 3 times, Clare as well in Munster with Limerick, could play them twice, we'll play them twice already, and then could meet them again.
Do Clare say, we go all out? No, not say that any team wouldn't go all out, but we could win a Munster final and not win an All-Ireland.
No, the Munster, they will live, yes, sleep, and die for the Munster title. And so will the Galway, as they'll be able to win that. But you're kind of going, right, what's the bigger picture at the end of the day? You don't want to pick up injuries.
And it's one less match on your journey.
You win that Leinster and you're looking at just skipping into an All-Ireland semi-final. Yeah.
Likely to be playing Tipperary.
Yes, there's my second team. It's kind of Limerick, Tip, and Galway is kind of where I'm aiming at.
So what happened to Tip against Waterford?
Geez, Tip just capitulated. No, did Waterford hit them? No, I don't know. No, Tipperary just...
They're down bodies too, as well.
They were just so poor on the day. Yeah. I think, even their passing, you look at Ford is a huge loss. He was kind of controlling the whole area, centre forward, wing forward. All that was manned by him. McGrath's just weren't the same cohesive kind of organised unit. And even their puckouts were slow. Their puckouts weren't to the right man. They were clearing the ball from the corner back position straight into Waterford hands. And Waterford had time and space to shoot all day long. But everything Waterford touched went over the bar. You're kind of going, this is mad. down in Thurles.
Yeah.
You're just kind of going, how is this happening?
And but a lot of talk about Davies' selection, putting his sub goalkeeper in as a sweeper.
Yeah, I see. No, he obviously plays number 16 on the jersey. I was kind of going, what is going on with this?
He plays outfield for his club.
Yeah.
But
that's typically only Dave Fitzgerald will try it. And he was it was game over for Fitzgerald anyway, because they were out really. But it was a case of, right, go at this, no more than Wexford. When the gun is to the head, how do you respond to it? Lee Chin was phenomenal, I thought, the last two.
Brilliant,
you know, his energy and his ability in the air. But that Hutchinson from Waterford, the way the ball broke in, catch it, flicked your man's, how he didn't connect with his head or rip his head off with the hurl, I don't know, into the goal, and you're kind of going, right, that's what the Waterford should be playing like. But again, that whole 16 man, the ball man behind the ball, and they were walking up the pitch with it. Tipperary didn't want to know about it.
Yeah.
So Cahill will have a few choice words, I'd imagine, a train this week. But that's a sting in the tail you wouldn't want to be getting, especially in, as you said, in an All-Ireland semi-final or quarter-final.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's going to get more interesting, I think, as the rest of the year goes on.
Just as long as our minors win now next weekend.
Yeah, that's a big one for them now. That is a big one for them.
Oh, it'd be great, just to, just to sicken them. Just to
It does, yeah. That's long enough we've been denied the opportunity, but I just think it'll stamp as something for them as well to have won something before they go on a bit further.
Yeah, it'll be a tough battle now. Like, Clare are not going to be no pushover in that final. But the Galway lads have proven to be a formidable outfit. They can score goals. They've taken points on the run. They're not reliant on free takers. And they have that strength and they have a depth there. With Healy at the helm too, it's a different kettle of fish. Like, the man, I don't know where he gets the time to do it, but, you know, they're phenomenal what he's given back to Galway hurling.
Yeah, we had him in here and he was talking about that and trying to work him with minors, but he just absolutely loves it and loves
hurling
and loves his team.
But that comes across with the players. But he's always very good with young kids anyway. It was, you know, and when that comes across and they respect that to you, they'll reciprocate on the field.
Yeah, that is huge, I think, especially guys, especially when they're not under 18, Dave, anymore. It's under 17. It's a year younger, and it's only 12 months, people will say, but it's the way the relationship he has with them.
You can influence them that bit more. They will listen to Healy, and you look at the experience that he has as a person himself, and you know what he's brought to Galway hurling, what he's learned from Galway hurling, and how to manage them. But he's got four kids of his own too, so he's well and truly busy. I don't know how Karen keeps going.
But anyway, look, that's the way it is. Listen, I'm going to head for another commercial break to set up our last segment of the program. This is a very, very short commercial break, lads, and we'll do that now.
You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
Oh, right, I told you it was a short one. Anyway, welcome back to the programme, David Collins and Cian O'Connell, our panel, along with George. Galway United, Cian, and I know it's one of the closest things to your heart and to your dad's heart. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I know, it's really good, Jerry, to win 15 out of 16 matches. Never happened before, probably never happen again, but it's really, really good levels of consistency. The game they lost, they were quite unfortunate. There was a, you don't want to be making excuses, but there was a bug in the camp that weekend, and it was one of the Friday Monday situations which they have to deal with coming weekend as well. And so there's still a long way to go. Obviously, to be 12 points clear is a really commanding position.
Well, you can thank Longford for that, even though they were the only team that beat us.
Yeah, no, I watched a bit of that game on Saturday night, and they played well, Longford, in that game against Waterford. But for United, just the level of consistency that's there at the moment is really good, and you have to give huge credit to John Caulfield, Ollie Horgan, and the coach Chris Colopy, because they're primed for every game, and they've fallen behind in games and they've recovered and they've shown kind of resilience. They also have dealt with things that they didn't deal with as well last year, where they had a couple of injuries, particularly in the second half last season. Killian Bruder was injured for a spell and they just weren't the same team. Alex Murphy had moved over to Newcastle as well, and they just never kind of dealt with that. But this year they've had injuries in recent weeks to Colm Horgan, Regan Donlan, Rob Slevin was suspended there a few weeks ago, and Maris Nugent came in and he retained his place. So they we're talking about the Galway footballers having a bit of depth. United seem to have a bit
and
more depth.
The goals have been spread around a bit as well.
That's the key thing, and it's
and last year we were relying on Stephen Walsh to somehow get a goal. This year the variety of goal scorers is great to see.
Vincent Borden is 8, David Hurley is 8, Ed McCarthy is 4, Francie Lomboto is a few, they've loads of players, and it's key. It's something.
Killian is a couple.
He's a couple as well, and it's something Stephen, of course, is chipping in, but it's something that they identified, that they wanted to have that spread around. So there's a lot of good work taking place. It's something that I probably would have felt that in the end, at the end of last season, everyone's in despair. But to me, I still had faith in the setup that was there. And I would always believed in John Caulfield, whereas you had other people were criticising, we didn't get up. But to me, the structure that had been established was good. And it's just a matter now of keeping it going. They have two games before the break. They need to get 6 points.
They have Bray next Friday night. That's in the Carlisle ground. On Monday, then they're at home to Finn Harps. And then they're off down to Wexford to play that second game on the 9th of June. Like every game, you know, Bray won't be easy. Finn Harps aren't going very, very well. I think Ollie will have something to say about them when they arrive. Going down to Wexford is a long way down, and they're a classy enough side. They don't... they won't rough you about the place, but they try to play good football. But I think we can match all of these all of the time now.
Yeah, no, and that's to win 15 out of 16. They've won games every way. Teams have, they've won battles, they've won football matches, they've won 15 out of 16. So that's the proof's in the pudding. And I think that there's a resilience there, and there's also a just. You can rely on them more than in previous years for a number of reasons, but there definitely seems to be a steely focus there. The different challenges that have come up, they've embraced them, they've taken them on. Yes, they lost that game down in Longford, missed a lot of chances that evening. They missed one early on, then Longford went down, bit of a sucker punch. And fairness to Longford, they were well organised in that game, and they have a shrewd manager, Stephen Henderson, and they've taken points. They took points off, yeah, off Waterford. So it's just a matter of maintaining that focus that they've shown.
And more than a hurling match or a Gaelic football match, teams are now coming to MADC Park and they're trying to park the bus just not to concede.
They are. But
Galway United are able to pick them off.
Because I think Galway United have actually already got into the mentality that every game's a cup final.
No, that's it. And
that seems to be the way, that because they find a way to win, but every game seems to be a cup final with them. And I think a lot of their success is to go to the sideline. The way they, two opposites attract, you know, two different types of guys involved, Ollie and John. But the whole setup, everybody seems to be singing off the one hymn sheet, Cian.
Yeah, no.
Mightn't have been the same in the last number of years.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something in that. And they have that bit of fire. There's a bit of bite about them that, for too long, I have no problem saying it, Galway United were too nice.
They're soft.
Nice team. Everyone liked coming to Terryland. It was nice away
was
trip
people,
for them.
Yeah, but there was people actually saying one time that Terryland Park was so good, a pitch, brilliant, you know, best surface in the country for years, that it was easier for them to play, and Galway United weren't as stubborn as maybe they could have been.
Yeah, but now they have John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan on the line. There's no shortage of passion there. On the pitch, you have Bruder, McCormack. The goalkeeper, Brendan Clark's been a huge addition. He's 9 clean sheets in the 16 games. Really, really good. Great distribution. Just a good leader. He's just a good fit for Galway United. So it's all good at the moment, but they have to keep it going.
The bus there, Jerry, is the 12 points clear. Let's hope that Galway United don't do what another club close to Mr. O'Connell's heart done. Arsenal. Set at the start. Bottlers. He was like Fran Berry in 1999 when Tijani, looking over their shoulder, he kept saying it, oh, City are a good team.
Arsenal are in a good position, George, but they didn't bottle it. They're playing Manchester City. They've nearly had a record points total that they had. They won 50 points in the first half of the season.
What did they win?
They didn't win anything. No one said they win anything, but I wouldn't accept that they bottled it. They were beaten by the better team. That's sport. Yeah. Sometimes you're beaten by the better team. You're beaten by the richer team. You're beaten by the more experienced team.
You're beaten by
the cannier team.
You're beaten by a better team. 115 charges of financial fair play.
For God's sake, they even were beaten by Everton in John Dyche's first game involved. How that happened, I don't know. And we're just popping back to Galway United for the moment. Their goal scoring record, the 44 goals scored, they've only conceded 7.
Wow.
Next best to them are Waterford, who have conceded 14. They have a plus goal difference of 37. Like, I mean, that's another point on the table. It's just unreal. And defensively, we probably don't mention them. We're talking about all the lads scoring goals. But that defence is...
No, it's brilliant, Sherry. And that's what I said, that they've dealt with. Colm Horgan came back. He was the captain the last time. He was a former club captain. He was involved the last time they got promoted. He has been missing for the last couple of weeks due to injury, but Conor O'Keefe has stepped in. Regan Donlan has missed a number of games. Morris Nugent came in for Rob Slevin, who was suspended. And the goalkeeper, Brendan Clark, has just been exceptional. He's in his late 30s. He's played more than 400 games in the League of Ireland, but he's just a really good influence on the team. And they're back five, including the keeper, have just been, regardless who's been out there, they've been phenomenal throughout the campaign.
In your experience, it's maybe too early to be saying this, if we were to go up to the Premier Division, there'd have to be more players brought in, I would suggest, with Premier League experience. But the team as it is at the moment wouldn't be destroyed in the Premier Division.
No, and they would have to make additions. There's no escape in that if they were to get into the Premier. But the one thing that they have, and they've had this for a number of seasons, is that, I don't know, sometimes in sport, and David has a lot more experience at high level sport than I have, but they're good lads. It's a good group. They're all, people talk about Galway United being, oh, they're a full time team or whatever. A lot of them they're not being paid huge money or anything, but they see it as an opportunity to progress their careers, and they're buying into that, and they're buying into the structure and the setup that's been established. The training is very good. It's a good setup, and they will have to add players if they were to get into the Premier League. But you wouldn't want to disrupt the unity they have and the sense of camaraderie they have, because that's been a key factor in this.
As an observer in M&DC Park, there's obviously something good going on in the club structurally. The women's team are going okay, pretty good actually, in fairness, for a first time in the league. The men are going really, really well. There's something in the background that's very positive there for Galway United.
Yeah, no, and you have to give credit to John Caulfield for that, because in a bizarre way, Jerry, during the COVID times, Galway United, due to the fact, I think, personally, at that time, you had a reduced inter-county GA calendar where for two years you had less league games, championship was straight knockout, less games. So in one way, they were the representative team for people that they were playing regularly, and they actually connected probably well with the sporting community in Galway, and that's been reflected in the crowds, where the crowds have been quite good at AIM&DC Park, and there's a buzz about the team and the club, and that's been generated by Caulfield, and the club have worked well. They still can do better going forward, connecting with local clubs, connecting with the community, if you want to call it that. They had a really successful club day there where they played Cove a number of weeks ago. It's more than 4,000 at the game, which is a really good crowd for a game in the first division of the League of Ireland. But there's definitely something stirring.
What's the average? Around two.
They're over two. They're over 2,000 as an average this season.
Well, if you're getting 10 or 15 quid per person going in the gate,
nice,
you know, you're making someplace between 20 and 30 grand for every home gate you have. That's decent money for a League of Ireland club.
No, it is, and they're sustainable at the moment, and the Comers have backed them well, so they're in a good place. But the key thing for them now is to deliver something from that, to make sure that the club comes out of it with something. The facilities is an ongoing issue. They've four boys underage teams, two girls underage teams, as well as the two first teams. So there's a lot of money going out too, Jerry, when you think that every weekend you could have maybe three or four Galway United teams playing on the road throughout the country. So the money is coming in, but it's going out quick enough too.
Okay, yeah, interesting.
Speaking of money.
No, well, hold on a second now, George, because I want to have a quick word about Athenry, who won the Connacht Junior Cup yesterday on penalties. TJ Ford sold saved his penalty, and they went on and won 5-4 on penalties. And Nottingham Carra FC also won the Shield. They won it 4-3. That was some game now. 4-3 against Con Rangers. So well done to both of them. You know, they're representing Galway as much as themselves, and I think that's good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Athenry and Knocknacarra, in fairness, and you even look at the underage structures at the moment, Knocknacarra making huge strides. They're being competitive in Premier divisions at most of the underage grades, which is a good thing, because they've huge numbers, more than 1,000 members, I think. Mm. Athenry to win that Connacht Junior Cup, they've been highly competitive with a good Salt Hill team, to push them close this season. So it's a great credit to the work that's been carried out in that club.
Now, George,
speaking of money,
Everton nearly got a financial injection, Jerry, because they nearly were going to be qualifying for the parachute payment.
Yeah,
being relegated and then coming back up.
I'll tell you,
the skin of your teeth, Jerry.
You're
avoiding it, Jerry. The skin of your teeth.
Absolutely. I bet we've been hanging on by the skin of our teeth and indeed our fingernails for the last 3 months.
I'm shocked, to be honest. Everton, a club that's.
Which were they in the same position last year?
What's going wrong?
They took a win against Crystal Palace, George, last year. There's plenty going wrong, George.
The biggest question, Jerry, for George is, what's going wrong with Manchester United?
I know.
Celebrating, what is it, third place to finish?
Yeah.
Third place. And winning a League Cup, and they're in an FA Cup final, and this is seen as an achievement for Manchester United Football Club, the so-called biggest club in the world.
The biggest club in the world, not the so-called team. And we will have an FA Cup to sit beside that, I think, next Saturday evening. It's been a huge season, I think, what we've seen yet with Ten Hag, and even his speech after the game yesterday.
But it's Manchester United, said, George.
It is Manchester United, but after years and years of mismanagement, and hopefully we will see the ownership.
I know you know how I feel.
The ownership problems resolve next week, and we hope that the right man gets it, Sheikh Jassim Bin Hamman Al Thani.
Get him talking about horse racing or something.
I think it was a good season for United. But I go back to Arsenal. I honestly thought two thirds of the way through the season that Arsenal were going to, not the huge, the biggest shock ever, but I really thought Arsenal were going to deliver a league, genuinely, Cian, the see the rabbit in the headlights sort of stuff. And the other thing I have to say about the Premier League, and a statement I made to you here, Jerry, in the studio, I think if Leicester go down, they'll end up like Blackburn and Wigan. They'll keep going now, because already they've said they're going to sell off their best players.
They have no choice. The best players will want to go, and they have really good players that you'd love to filter into certain teams. I feel sorry for them in a way, and I'm sorry in another way. I don't, because Everton survive.
But they, you know, the way the club has been run, with the people that are running it, they used the sale of players last year to something like the Glazers done to support their own businesses.
I think a worst case down at the bottom, Leeds. Unfortunately, Leeds just didn't show up against Spurs. Spurs were not playing.
The only time Leeds show up is their supporters when there's a bit of trouble, nothing else.
Yeah, but George, you can't say that kind of
thing. That's when they show up. But Leeds have been terrible again.
They were shocked against Spurs, and Spurs are not a good team.
And again, it shows you that probably there's too much money, lads, as they're involved in the soccer across channel and the TV money and all that. Was the minute clubs get a sniff of relegation, they panic and they're bringing in Sam Allardyce.
After one goal in this game against Spurs, the crowd were chanting.
One of the players
chanting Marcelo
Bielsa's name. They panicked. Like any club, they all panicked. I actually think if Leicester held on to Brendan Rodgers, they might have escaped the drop.
Yep.
But Dean Smith had no pedigree, really.
Yeah, he had no money. It was being taken out of the club.
And one of the Leeds players after the game threw his jersey to one of the supporters, and the supporter fired it straight back at him. That just shows you, you know.
It's a
what about Luton coming up, lads? And that ramshackle of a ground there.
Well, to hell with the ramshackle of a ground.
It's a bit of character.
Nine seasons ago, they were not in league football, they've gradually got themselves from nowhere to the Premier League. They're probably going to be the first out the door again when things come around at the end of the season. I know, I hear that there's development plans for a better pitch than they have, or a better ground, but
what's it worth to them to actually get up?
$180 million they put the cost. $180 million game. It was builder.
Wow.
I was hoping Coventry come up, having family over in Coventry. Was hoping to get it away.
I would have liked to see Coventry coming back.
How would you feel with the other two clubs that got relegated? Like Southampton. So we've already said Leeds and Leicester. I think Leicester could be good the way Blackburn did. Southampton, who traditionally had a great academy and sold on players and what, change of ownership within the club, and that business plan goes out the window, and as is the case, you reap what you sow.
You lost a lot of experienced players as well. They went maybe too young that they had, and it's a pity, because from putting our Ireland hats on, Gavin Bazunu was in goal there, and you'd like to see more Irish players playing in the Premier League for the Irish international team, but overall they probably maybe had too many younger players that'd be probably reflected that they just lacked a bit of experience.
They need to look either side of them down in the south coast. Look at how Brighton are ran, and look at how Bournemouth are ran. And I think the message for them is in their neighbours, the way their neighbours are playing.
It is, it is, Jerry. But and it's only run. A few years ago everyone was saying, look at how Leicester are ran, and now they're after going down. So it can now Brighton definitely seem to be a really progressive club off the pitch, and the way they seem to identify players and get them ahead of others. But it's funny because it can change very quickly.
Evan Ferguson, stay or go? I know he signed a new contract, but there's a method of madness.
He'll stay for a while, yeah.
He's had a huge season.
He doesn't need to go to a big team at the moment.
Probably not, Gerard, but he's the one breakthrough player that we were looking for. We were looking for, like, Seamus Coleman has been the highest profile player probably Ireland have had in the Premier League the last number of years. And he's coming to the end of his tether, whether we like it or not. But to have Evan Ferguson, to a lesser extent, Gavin Mizuno, Kevin Kelleher,
I think Gavin Mizuno is a really good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I heard discussion about him, where I can't remember who said it, that when they were coaching, he was the best goalkeeper that he had come across at any particular time. He's still very, very young. And
I just think Ferguson is carrying the mantle for Irish players now. He's very young, he's 18. There was a lovely interview with him on the TV. He's very grounded. You'd be hoping, and Brighton have a tradition of having well grounded young players. Mm. Some of them fall off the trolley, let's say, a little bit, but I just think he's very well grounded. But he is now going to be the most talked about Irish player across channel, and it's good that we have a guy at that.
Dave, wouldn't you love to be a professional so that people can talk about?
But it's good, Jerry, that we have.
I don't know if you could survive it though. Like listening or watching all the games that they play. Like, you have to be a special athlete to last from age.
And everything is scrutinised to the nth degree.
And then you're dealing with social media hassles. I was looking at the French Open there and the AI that's dealing with all the abuse that their players are getting. Yeah. You know, it's... I don't know. It's tougher on younger people growing up now. It's definitely tougher on younger athletes.
But for me, I just think Ferguson is going to be the talisman for Ireland going forward. We go back to Liam Brady when he came on the scene. Wonderful footballer. I think Ferguson hopefully keeps going the right way, because it's great to have a competitive Irish team.
You need icons that are enticing players and enticing people to play the game. And I was just going to say, like, even from Galway, you've Galway United, you've Connacht Rugby, you've Galway Hurling and Football, Camogie, you've great teams in Galway, and it's a great place for young kids to be growing up, because there's plenty to aspire to.
Absolutely, and we don't want to be trying to cover it from this end, but anyway, it's a difficult job. It's a job that everybody loves. Anyway, listen, lads, we've got to wrap it. Doc is waving his finger at me there, saying we're coming up to the end of the programme. Thanks, Dave.
No problem.
Thanks, Keane. Thanks, George. We'll do it all again next Monday.
George is still
night,
kicking here, Joe.
Even though it is a bank holiday, we'll be here in the same place at the same time.